Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Pitch. Swing a long drive, deep left, way back,
gone! Hey everybody, JJ Cooper, Jeff Ponce here, another Baseball America Prospect Hot Sheet podcast today as we survey another week of the 2023 minor league season. Jeremiah Jackson, you could almost kind of say fill in the whatever category you want position for Jeremiah Jackson with the Angels, Double A Rocket City, third base, outfielders, played shortstop, played a little bit of everywhere. But he's our number one prospect on the hot sheet this week. We're going to dive into some of the names on the hot sheet. We're also going to dive into a couple of names of prominent prospects not on the hot sheet this week. But Jeff, how are you doing to start off? How are things going? You got rained on. You did go to a big league game with the family this weekend, and are you dried out yet?
I had three rain games last week. I had the Ricky Tiedemann game last Tuesday where it got banged in the third inning. I had another game the following day in Worcester that rained, that had a delay. And then I went to a big league game. It was the first big league game for my two youngest. They've been to numerous minor league games all over the country. They've been to a bunch of Cape League games. They've been to college games, Boston College, not far down the road from Fenway, but this was their first experience at Fenway. And it was a blast. I had the whole family there. Got to see Logan Allen, which was kind of a nice full circle moment for me. I saw Allen in college on the Cape a couple of times. I saw him in AA. I saw him in AAA earlier this season. I think one of his last AAA starts. Then I got to see him in the majors. So one of my cheese balls, because I love those short, you know, lefties with the tough angle and the flat fastball, the sweeper, the splitter. So that was a lot of fun. And Chris Sale pitched too. They may look back and say, wow, I saw two pretty good lefties in my first game. Not bad. Kind of. It's a tradition. My first game at Fenway, I saw Clemens versus Saberhagen in '88. So and wow. Lee Smith got the save. Yep. I think George Brett was in that game, if I'm not mistaken. Bo Jackson, of course, Wade Boggs, you know, a lot of those guys. So pretty good.
To date myself, the most prominent pitcher I remember from my first game as a kid was Tug McGraw.
That's not too bad. You know. Country legend.
So we're going to dive into prospects. There are a couple of guys that were on this week's list that stood out to us, so we're going to kind of go back and forth. I'm going to start out with one from me, which is Christian Arnstrom Strand, who's number two on this week's hot sheet. As a reminder, as we always do, the hot sheet is not a ranking of the top prospects in baseball. It's the hottest prospects of the past week. And it's kind of hard to be too much hotter than what Arnstrom Strand has done since he returned from a IL stint with a back injury. Seven games back, he has four home runs. He also hit .458 this week. He also didn't strike out, which is a good news for Encarnacion Strand. Only four strikeouts this week in I think 26 plate appearances. So a very good week that way. Also notable, he's playing first base and first base only so far, which I do think is probably important to note because it very well could help speed his arrival. If you talk about Christian Arnstrom Strand, the third baseman, you say, is he ready to play a big league third base? And the answer is no. And I don't know if he will be. Like, he's got a great arm, but it's not always easy out there. I always thought he could move to the outfield if they needed to. But with Joey Votto still sidelined, if you put him at first base, Jeff, the thing that we've always talked about, this is a guy, like, if you just talk about most productive hitters and track records of production, Encarnacion Strand, this is his career numbers as we record this, getting ready for the return of minor league baseball on Tuesday. 323, 382, 605. That's in 151 games, 600 plate appearances at, you know, low A, high A, double A, triple A now, right? And that comes off of he was great at Oklahoma State. He was great at Yavapai. There really isn't a point where he really hasn't hit, but there's always been this little bit of a yeah, but with him. Hasn't there been, Jeff?
Yeah, and he's one of these guys that it's the numbers are what they are, and he's really productive. And he was certainly a guy that, you know, had popped last year, and I think we had him, you know, pretty early as a breakout, and, you know, for good reason. It's just the chase numbers are high, and that always gives me some pause that once he gets up the upper levels and he sees truly advanced pitching, you know, does it catch up to him a little bit? Do those swing decisions catch up to him a little bit? And is that where he struggles for the first time? And, you know, maybe the power doesn't play the same way it has. That being said, he's hit at every single level. He's now hitting at AAA. Maybe it's the type of hitter that he is. Sometimes the approach stuff gets better as guys age. And he certainly has a fairly cushy landing spot for a home park in Great American Ballpark in Cincinnati that can cure a lot of ills, particularly from a power standpoint and certainly from a batting average on balls in play standpoint. So I think the numbers will be good. I tend to gravitate toward hitters that have a higher walk rate, more discipline. But, you know, you certainly can't say he's a coward at the plate. He likes to swing it, and he does a lot of damage when he does. So there's a lot to like.
But this is where this gets puzzling is I hear everything you're saying, and, like, we keep waiting for, oh, he's going to hit the higher levels, and that's where you're going to see him have to start making adjustments, right? And so last year he hit 20 homers in 74 games, 296, 375, 99 at high A Cedar Rapids. Okay, college guy, high A. When he gets promoted, that's when we'll have to see. So then he hits 333 with five homers in 13 games, 400, 685 slugging at double A Wichita. Then gets traded, goes to double A Chattanooga where he hits 309, 351, 522, seven more home runs in 35 games. Ends up hitting 32 home runs overall last year while hitting 304. And now, start of this season, he's hit four home runs in seven games, a 448, 500, 931 slash line. We're running out of levels for at some point this reckoning to come due. And that's where this gets fascinating is because there are exceptions, right? There are outliers who manage to hit for average and power with a very aggressive approach. Vladimir Guerrero Sr., I'm looking at you, for example. I am not saying he has that kind of bat to ball or anything like that. But my point being is we are talking about a guy who has shown massive power wherever he's gone and has managed to hit for average while doing it. And when I say hit for average, the last time he didn't hit 300 in a season in his career, I don't know if it's ever happened. I can only go back to his senior year of high school. I haven't asked him personally. It's possible he had a bad sophomore year of high school or something, or his travel ball team, he had a rough year or whatever. But I can track from there on. And it's like, he did it in JUCO. He did it in college. He did it every level of the minors so far. He's now in AAA. At some point, I'm going like, okay, if he does this, you know, and he gets to the majors doing this, it's like, I'm not saying he's going to be that guy, that outlier, but I am saying at some point you start allowing that it very well may be that he's an outlier as this rare guy who can chase, be overly aggressive, and for some reason it doesn't come back to haunt him because he just has that rare knack of putting bat on ball and hitting it wherever it is, a bad ball hitter who hits the ball really hard. Am I crazy to think that could be his outcome?
No, I think it's reasonable. I mean, you look into the career minor league numbers, he now has exactly 600 at bats, over 151 games, you know, 35 doubles, 40 home runs, 101 runs scored, 141 runs driven in. He slashed 323, 382, 605 over that time. But the one caveat besides the 25.4% strikeout rate to a 6.9% walk rate is he's done all that with a 390 batting average on balls in play over those 151 games. That number has to come down once he gets to the major leagues.
Sure.
And I would imagine the strikeout rate is probably going to be closer to 30 without a lot of walks. That gives me some pause. You know, now, so far in the first seven games of this season, and if you look at spring training and kind of, you know, roll that into the sample, he seems to be striking out less despite not walking. So I don't know. I mean, it's possible. It's just this is such a tough profile to sort of pin down. I think he'll hit, and he'll hit for power. I just don't know, you know, what the overall line in comparison to the rest of the league is going to necessarily look like. But
so I don't dislike. Okay, so let's say that
we take 40 points of BABIP away from him, right? Which that would be a lot, right? 40 points that which would still admittedly bring him down to a still robust 350 BABIP. But a 350 BABIP, if we took 40 points away from him, that still makes him like a 260, 270 hitter with power. Now, his OBP would dip from that, wow, it's really good, to more of a playable range and all that. But like the thing I would say is his power is real enough that, especially like you said, playing it at a very, very healthy ballpark to play in as a power hitter, I think that this could be more playable than I thought. But it is fascinating to see where this guy goes. So Jeff, I've took out one of my cheese balls from this week's hot sheet. Who would you like to focus on first?
Why don't we go back to the well here with Matthew Liberatore?
Okay.
He's continued to pitch incredibly well this season. You know, we've sort of seen this since the very start of the season. And, you know, I think the thing that's been impressive with him is despite a lot of pitchers, especially in the early going, sort of being limited in terms of how many innings they're going per start, Liberatore has been a guy who's gone 5+ in each one of his starts thus far this season. He's had 6 turns so far. You know, he's getting strikeouts at the highest rate of his career by far. He's got a 33.8% K percentage at this point. The command has stayed. He hasn't lost it at all. He's generating weaker contact than he has at any other point in his career. His batting average on balls in play against isn't out of whack. It's 315, and he's producing the way he's producing. And, you know, in terms of the numbers right now, he's got a 2.14 whip that's supported by a 296 xFIP. The stuff has been up. He's figured out his sequencing. You know, he's really utilizing, I think, his arsenal to, you know, it's sort of the best that it could be used and utilized. He's mixing the four-seam fastball when he needs it. He's mixing in the sinker when he needs it. He's really leaned in on that high-spin curveball, which is it's really a straight curveball in terms of, you know, a traditional shape.
An old-school curveball, yeah.
Yes, you know, and it's working. And, you know, he can throw the slider and the changeup for strikes when needed. And he's getting a lot of whiffs on that curveball as well. I think that we're seeing what I had sort of doing the reporting on the Cardinals in the offseason. I think that some people, when the list came out and then our top 100 came out, there was sort of a lot of chirping about where Liberatore was ranked. And he's certainly justifying the belief from the organization and some opposing scouts that I spoke with, where it was like, hey, he's still 23. I think that the narrative publicly is very heavily rooted in the fact that he was assigned to AAA in 2021 because he was good at the ultimate site. And that was probably in over-assignment at that point. Had he gone to high A, had he gone to double A, probably dominates. The narrative around him is a lot different. He seems like he's had his swagger. He's had his confidence. He's striking batters out. He's limiting hard contact. you know, but command and control is there. At this point, it's really just a matter of when do the Cardinals finally sort of bring Liberatore back up and give him the reins in that, you know, fourth or fifth starter spot, if you want to call that. Because Jake Woodford so far has not been very good. Liberatore is on the 40-man roster. He's already made his major league debut. I don't know what's holding him back. I actually figured that he would have been up with the major league team already by this point, considering how the Cardinals are struggling. And you know, they got to get something for Randy Arozarena, one of the better players in the game, right? So, I mean, I don't really understand why he hasn't been called up as of yet, but he's sort of passed all the tests at AAA at this point. Though I know it's his third time through, but he's 23, so he's still actually pretty young for the level.
I don't want to overly simplify, but I always look with Liberatore that one of the things that's always been true is his velocity kind of waxes and wanes a little bit. And I really do feel like when you see like, okay, what's he sitting? And right now he's sitting 94, 95, touching a 6-7. When he's doing that, he's just a better pitcher than when you say, well, what's he sitting today? It's like 91, 92, which has happened at times. And when he does, it's not just the velocity, but the velocity plus the movement, all that. It's just nothing plays as well when he doesn't have the same arm speed, the same velocity. And that's, to his credit, what he's showing right now. And that, to me, I'm with you. Like, it seems like I don't think he needs to – there. It's hard to say he needs a whole lot of extra time in AAA to add polish. He knows the sights of Memphis pretty well by now. I would put it that way. So the next one that I want to talk about is a guy who's up in the big leagues now, which is Dominic Fletcher, the younger brother of David Fletcher, the former Angels shortstop, now not, you know, obviously has kind of lost that job to Zach Neto, but Dominic Fletcher comes up largely because the D-backs have had injuries in the outfield. But I do think he has been playing at Reno. Reno is a wonderful place to hit, but that being said, I'd kind of be interested to see what Fletcher does if he gets much of an opportunity, because this guy he's always been, going back to his time at Arkansas in college. I should specify Arkansas Razorbacks, not Arkansas as in double A Texas League, but going back to Arkansas Razorbacks, he's always been a great defender. There's always been some pop there. He's hitting for average and power. There's speed, there's athleticism. The D-backs have an overwhelming number of close to the majors or big league outfielders, seemingly almost all of whom can also play defense as well. But I just think that it is interesting to see what he does if he gets much of an opportunity. But I'm going to give you your dealer's choice here, Jeff, because these are a couple of guys who I think that are notable to you. Ben Brown, right-hander for the Cubs, makes the list. Do you want to talk about him, or do you want to talk about Rockies outfielder Sterling Thompson?
Oof. That's a
tough choice here.
That is a tough choice. You know what? We talked about Ben Brown in the fantasy podcast, so let's switch it up. We'll go with Sterling Thompson. I don't know how much longer Sterling Thompson is going to be in high A. I cover the Rockies. I have double A Hartford out here. It's a pretty good lineup already. And they do have a third baseman by the name of Warming Bernabell, who I think people are probably pretty familiar with. But Thompson at 21 out of the draft, you know, was a supplemental first rounder last year out of the University of Florida. He's been great so far. You know, he's not a crazy walk guy. The power isn't huge. This guy is contact, approach, gets the bat and the ball, hits the ball to all fields, has enough power. It's not going to, you know, drop your jaw or anything like that. The exit velocities aren't crazy. But he spreads the ball around, you know, will hit the ball up the middle, will go the other way, does have the ability to pull the ball. He's striking out less than he's walking right now. And, you know, the contact and approach numbers are just absolutely, you know, out of this world. Bigger guy, left-handed bat. I think there's still more power projection potentially. If you look at the swing, you know, some changes probably need to be made there. But not really. When you look at the numbers, I mean, he's hitting 463, 513, 746 over his first 18 games in high A. Only had 11 games of full season experience prior to this. You know, advanced SEC hitter, sure. But, you know, a 229 WRC plus, I think, is probably even above what our expectations are for a guy like Thompson. It's a really good profile. He's sort of a line drive hitter. But, you know, can't get the ball in the air. It's not an overly ground ball sort of approach or anything like that. And he's been playing more third base than I think we expected, which I think is probably a good sign for his profile. We'll see if that holds up as he moves up the ranks here. But he's an exciting one and definitely a name to pay attention to. And maybe in some other orgs, he might already be promoted to Double A with the things that he's doing over the first month, especially if he keeps it up over the next couple of weeks. He may force their hand there a little bit. So, he's a really interesting name to me. And, you know, I think he's one of these guys where coming out of a pretty deep draft for college hitters, maybe he got lost in the shuffle a little bit when people were, you know, getting hyped up about whoever this offseason.
No, he is an interesting one. Definitely one that also I had Dylan White for our fantasy experts, Robo Scout kind of highlighted him in Sunday's piece. He's still up at baseballamerica.com. You can check that out as well. Definitely one of the names. Also the Helium name in this week's, also one that showed up in Robo Scout. So be checking that out. The other thing I do want to talk about a player who has not made the hot sheet, I don't believe actually yet in his pro career, which may be surprising considering that he was a top five pick not that long ago. But we'll do that right after this quick break.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Why do I use Indeed for our hiring at Baseball America? Because it takes so much of the busy work out of hiring and does it for me. I can find highly qualified candidates in one place, set up interviews, and communicate with them all on Indeed. Leveraging over 140 million qualification preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So you use Indeed. As you use it more, the better it gets. And listeners to this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Baseball America. Just go to Indeed.com/Baseball America right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Baseball America. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Are you looking to upgrade your game on and off the field? Triple Crown Jewelry makes the cleanest jewelry in the game so you can show your style. Their jewelry is made by athletes for athletes with durability and style in mind. They make the best-selling number pendants and chains that you're already seeing on the field. Whether your style is gold, matte black, or silver, Triple Crown Jewelry has what you need. Personally, I'm more about the silver, but Triple Crown is ready for whatever your style. The chains look great. They're durable with a shine that stands out. And when you put it on, it has a nice heft to it. You can feel the quality. Your number is yours. It's part of your identity, and Triple Crown knows that. They have numbers from 00 to 99 available, so you can show your number, your identity, on and off the field. Their jewelry will never turn your neck green or fade. They're tarnish-resistant and made to last. These aren't just accessories. They're a statement of your dedication and love for the game. And that shine is unmatched. And in addition to choosing between the three different finishes, you can also choose from a variety of chains, including rope, Franco, and Cuban chains. So try it yourself. If you're ready to elevate your drip on and off the field, get some new drip at triplecrownjewelry.com and get a special discount just for our listeners. Get 25% off your first order site-wide with promo code BA2022. That's BA2022 at triplecrownjewelry.com. And by doing so, you're supporting our podcast. Orders are shipped the same or next business day from New Jersey, and orders over $50 get free shipping. Don't miss out on the opportunity to make a statement both on and off the field. Go to TripleCrownJewelry.com and lead the league in drip.
Get all the Masterforce outdoor power equipment you need to maintain your yard at Menards. Own the outdoors with Masterforce 80-volt power equipment, delivering all the power of gas without the maintenance. The entire 80-volt line is powered by brushless motors for ultimate performance and productivity. From lawnmowers to leaf blowers, string trimmers, and more, find everything you need to create the lawn of your dreams with Masterforce power equipment at Menards. Save big money at Menards.
And we're back. So, Jeff, the tease that I just gave there is one that I don't think was probably enough for people to figure out. But I've been watching some of Jack Leiter's starts at AA. He's returned to AA Frisco, same place that he spent basically all of last year at as well. Did not have a great year at AA Frisco last year. Not a shock that he's returned there. He went 3-10, 5-5-4 last year with 88 hits in 92 innings. 11 home runs, 56 walks, 109 Ks. He's back at Frisco. Currently, after five starts, he is a 0-2, 6.75 ERA. Opponents hitting .282 against him. More hits than innings pitched. The home runs are, again, a problem. Five home runs so far. I will throw it to you that I'll kind of, again, I've been watching a number of his starts, but are we at the point of being, he's not a top 100 prospect for us, so we have exhibited concern for a while here, I think it would say, but are we at the point, this is now 28 AA starts, 112.2 innings. At what point does concern flip to, okay, as great as his college resume was, are we getting to enough of a body of work to say, I don't know if that's going to translate to the pro level as well?
Yeah, I think we're at that point now. I've had this conversation offline with some folks in the industry, and yeah, I mean, it's a major question mark right now. To me, he looks like a reliever. The fastball was down last year. The slider was sort of the big step forward. It was an overassignment, probably AA. I'm sure, you know, based on his college track record, the kind of competitor he is, it made sense to some degree at that point.
Absolutely.
It has not been, it's a tough place to pitch. Absolutely. Frisco, the Texas League, the ball flies. It's not easy, especially if you have a home run problem. It's not a great place to pitch. You know, he pitched in Amarillo this past week. But the home runs weren't even the issue last week. You know, he just got consistently hit. And
by the way, let me interject on that. Amarillo, one of the best MILB broadcast out there, post exit velos. Mm-hmm. You know, they post velo and exit velo, which kudos, great work. And let me just tell you, the number of 100 plus exit velos that Leiter was giving up in that game, like there was no, oh, he would, you know, it was a bleeder here and a bloop there. It was 100 plus, 100 plus, 100 plus, 100 plus.
Yeah. And it seems like he's sort of one of two things. He's either unable to consistently land his pitches in the strike zone and he's walking the house like he had in, you know, his previous start where he walked five over 2 1/3 innings. Or it's a start like this where he's giving up a lot of hard contact, consistently getting barreled. You know, he still misses bats. He still strikes out batters. He's had 29 strikeouts over 20 innings, but he can rarely go deep. The command is bad. I would say it's probably not even below average at this point. I think you'd probably mark it as poor. And you just even look at his, you know, career numbers. He's got a 161 whip. He's got a 13.7% walk rate. It's bad. I mean, you know, a ERA close to six. And, you know, that's over 112 innings. It's over 27 starts. To me, he looks like you're going to end up wanting him to air it out of the pen for, you know, the long term. Comes in for an inning, he can use that fastball, you know, try to get people to chase on the breaking stuff. and I'd have to look at the numbers the second time through the orders, but having watched a few of his starts this year and last year, it seems like he can be pretty good in the first inning or two. And then, you know, the second time through the order, he gets figured out pretty quickly. Your guys, you know, learned to lay off of his stuff. It's a bad look. I mean, I can't think of a college starter that was drafted this high that's looked as bad out of the gate over the first year plus as Leiter has. And by the way,
he did make the option
a year ago. Recently.
Mark Appel was worse than this. That was the number one pick.
That was a decade ago.
Yeah, but Mark Appel, like, and the thing with Mark Appel, I remember writing it at the time, like, great guy. I feel bad, but like it became very clear very quickly that Mark Appel, I remember we did a piece talking to Midwest League scouts about him at the end of that first year. And it was like, this is not what a 1-1 pick looks like. Then he went to Lancaster the next year, which admittedly, if you were going to design a horror show for a pitcher, that'd be the place to go. But was getting teed up to the tune that's like that. I did a study at the time that just like pointed out that you don't go from being destroyed 10 plus runs, which was happening to Mark Appel in high A, to being a big league ace. It's like when you talked about top five picks, it was just hard to find that example. And in Leiter's case, what you said, the thing that stands out from watching him to me is the control and command of his secondaries are not allowing him to have a lot of success. He had 59% strike percentage last year, 58% this year. 60% is kind of, to me, like the floor for a starter. Like, you really want to be 62, 63 is more kind of the average. 66, 67, you're really throwing strikes. But when if you're at 58%, you really aren't putting yourself in a position. You're talking about you're going to have a lot of long counts. He's averaging 21 pitches an inning this year. Well, just extrapolate that out. They only nowadays pretty much let you go 100 pitches, right? Like, you're not getting through the fifth on 21 pitches an inning. Like, you're talking about a lot of deep counts. 282, 398, 551 is what opponents are hitting against him. His fastball does get swings and misses up in the zone. As he gets against double-A hitters, if he's too far elevated out of the zone, they take. That's a ball. But what you said, you're not seeing that where he's getting swings and misses in the zone consistently with the slider. You're not seeing it with, you know, he really doesn't right now seem to have a secondary that generates consistent success in the zone. It's about, can you nibble on the edges of the zone, which seems strange to say with a guy who can give you a 97, 98 with hop at the top of the zone, but that's kind of really the case. And no, he doesn't have that control, that command to kind of nibble. To go to what you were saying, it's kind of true. Like, so, but the first inning has also been really, the first inning opponents are hitting 381, 480, 810 against him this year, which if the slugging number starts with an eight, that's never going to be good. He does then is much better in the second and then is okay in the third, but then the fourth and the fifth, you know, which is really as far as he's gone, are struggles again. But I just the thing I would say with this is we saw what he's done in the past. You think you kind of figure that at some point there is some more in there as he kind of regroups, changes his approach a little bit, all that. But it's hard to see him. That the thing that does stand out is college aces who are drafted at the top of the draft, the ones who are the preeminent studs are the ones who then just the minors are no challenge for them. Like, you saw Chris Sale. Chris Sale was coming out of, you know, a smaller college, obviously, than Jack Leiter was. The minors almost held nothing for him, and he was in the big leagues in a minute and a half. When you talk about Justin Verlander, we talk about those guys. Like, again, at this point, obviously, we're not comparing Jack Leiter to those guys. But when you go as high as he did in the draft, you start with kind of hoping that he is that fast moving guy. This is a reminder. Not all the guys are going to be fast moving like we thought they were, because in Jack Leiter's case, he feels further from the majors right now than he did the moment he signed his pro contract. And you kind of, again, we root for prospects. We hope that it'll turn around for him, but I do think it is notable that it's a Andrew Abbott returned to AA to start this year, right? Like a guy who had some ups and downs, but generally was reasonably successful in the Southern League last year, returns to AA, probably shouldn't have been there. And then in a minute and a half is like, please get me out of here. I'm going to just strike out everyone that I see here and walk no one. Jack Leiter in that return to AA, it's not working that way so far. But, you know, again, we'll see. I would expect that we're going to see Kumar Rocker join him in AA before long. Kumar Rocker, who they sent on a really less aggressive assignment when you consider that Kumar Rocker is, you know, by experience 1 year further on in his career than Jack Leiter. But Kumar Rocker has been generally pretty good at high A in the South Atlantic League. Expect that he'll be going to Frisco before too long. But so far, like, again, there are warning signs there, I guess is the way to say it, Jeff.
Yeah, it's rough. I mean, anytime you've watched him, for the most part, it has not been good over the last year, and he's struggled tremendously. So we'll see where it goes. Hopefully he figures it out and, you know, can sort of right the ship here and get it back on track as a starter. But for me, I think you look at the body, you look at the effort, you look at the command issues, but the fact that there's a good fastball and some stuff, it kind of equals reliever to me. And that wouldn't be such a bad outcome if you just blindly did the taste test of looking at his performance over the first year. You know, you woke up from a 10-year coma and just watched Jack Leiter and were, you know, asked what this guy was. That's probably what you might say.
But, well, anyone else that you want to cover before we wrap up this Prospect Hot Sheet podcast, Jeff?
No, I think that's enough. You can leave him wanting more for next week. I'm going to be out at the ballpark quite a bit this week. I think we're going to see Ricky Tiedemann again tonight. And then I'm going to be in the tri-state area this weekend, checking out Jackson Holliday in Brooklyn and Kevin Parada. You know, Alex Ramirez is on that team. Also going to see some Spencer Jones and James Wood. And I think there's going to be one day on Saturday where I'm going to either do Hudson Valley or Brooklyn and then drive back to Jersey where I'm staying. And I'm not too far from Somerset. And I might be able to get some Jason Dominguez as well. So a whole lot of hot prospects I'm going to be checking out this week.
Awesome. But, well, for Jeff, I am JJ. Check out Prospect Hot Sheet at baseballamerica.com. Kyle Glazer, who put together the order on this week's, will be chatting at Baseball America today with that as well. So if you have any questions, feel free to ask him. For Jeff, I'm JJ. So long, everybody.